Kyle Wallace, Brad Nortman. Nope. Is Jason Moley on hold? We couldn't find the Jason bump. Huh.
It's so confusing back there, I'm sure.
Yeah, Strofe labels stuff weird. No Alex Strofe. Don't know if he's married or not, but we welcome in Jason Moley into Kyle Bruss Nortman. Jason, what's up?
How we doing, guys?
We're doing well. We're doing well. Discussing a lot about the executive, scout, GM's top 10 list of quarterbacks and Jordan Love falling in the honorable mention and just sort of looking at this year. I feel like you've used this word a lot. And I feel like it applies to a lot of places within this team. A pivotal year for the Green Bay Packers. You got Ed Policy, you got Jordan Love, you got the defensive line. There's just so much for this team and their expectations. What do you think stands out as like the most pivotal area that you're looking to find out about in 2025?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there's, as you said, there's a bunch of areas where, and they're all important, right? Like their defense was statistically really good, but their pass rush was inconsistent, and Rashawn Gary and Lucas Van Ness are in a pivotal year to be more effective edge rushers and play like the first round picks. And in Rashawn Gary's case, a $96 million contract guy, more consistently, you know, we say this about Jordan all the time. We all agree he's a good quarterback. Nobody thinks he sucks, but how good is he going to be? And is he going to be a Pro Bowl, all pro MVP candidate? You know, put the team on his back type quarterback. Is he going to be a guy that you win with him or you win because of him? And Aaron Rodgers, they won a lot of times because of him and in spite of their defense at times as well. You know, all those wide receivers, you know, they're the ones that are really in pivotal years, especially Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson, who are in the final years of their contracts. And, you know, Jaden Reed and Dontavian Wicks, who will be eligible for extensions after this season. There's three offensive linemen who are in the final year of their contracts. And is Zach Tom going to play out his contract, or is he going to get an extension and end up having to bet on himself and maybe make himself a ton of money going somewhere else? I mean, there's just so many critical points to this season for so many players. Luke Musgrave. Like, the last 2 years have been brutal for him after he got off to a decent start his rookie year. So, you know, I think that applies to everybody. But in Jordan Love's case, like, you know, I do find myself wondering if, you know, Packers fans and even those of us who cover the team overvalue him, because this is kind of the area he winds up in, whether it's the one from Jeremy Fowler or it's the one from Pro Football Focus. I mean, that's kind of the spot that he ends up in. And, you know, for some reason, there are others, Dan Orlovsky, et cetera, who believe he's much better than he gets credit for.
Jason, if we fast forward to July 14th, 2026, and Jordan Love is still the 12th best quarterback on ESPN's list next year, are you concerned?
I mean, no. I think there's a lot of really good quarterbacks. It's not going to be great if he's in that spot because he, you know, missed eight games due to injury. It's not going to be great if they, you know, go 10-7, make a road playoff game and lose. And he's at the center of that again, right? Like, you know, he threw the two interceptions in the second half against San Francisco. He threw three interceptions in the game against Philly. Like, to be viewed as a top 10 or higher quarterback, you got to kind of do it when the game is on the line. And he had a great game against Dallas. Everybody seems to, at least in the national media, forget that from his playoff run 2 years ago. So I will be surprised if he's that low. I mean, I would think he has a improved season this year and he's somewhere between 8 and 10 a year from now, but that's purely a guess.
Jason, the mystery of Jaden Reed last year, he started off so hot in the first nine games where he had over 600 yards receiving, and then he kind of really fizzled out and only had about 235 for the last seven games of the season. What do you think this should be attributed to? Is that to Jaden Reed just not catching the ball consistently, not getting open consistently, or do you think it has something to do with Matt LaFleur and scheming him open?
I don't think it's Matt LaFleur scheming him open, Kyle. I think it's a couple things. I think one, that, you know, he did drop a lot of balls. I mean, he, for all the grief that Dontavian Wicks absorbed, Dontavian Wicks dropped one ball in the final eight games. Like, he took a problem and fixed it. Jaden Reed dropped a lot of balls, one. And two, he was pretty beat up. And if I'm going to criticize LaFleur in any way for his usage of Jaden Reed, it's sending him around the end on end arounds or pop passes. And I still think about this play. I mentioned it on the State of the Packers show with Gabe and Strofe. Like, he comes, it's like in the near red zone area. It's like inside like the 5 yard line. And he comes around the end and he just gets obliterated by a defender. And I think Matt LaFleur has talked about it on the record that they want to use him a little bit differently so he's not so beat up by the end of the season. And if they do that, you know, maybe he's more productive in the passing game, and maybe there isn't the drop-off that you saw last year.
Is that why Savion Williams may play a bigger role? And when I say bigger role, like maybe you utilize him in that, he's a thicker guy?
Yeah, he's definitely, yeah. I think, Kyle, we talked about this too, whether it was on this show or Sunday Karma, but I think that's what Matt LaFleur would like to do. Now, you know, we have to pump the brakes on Savion Williams. I know we've already got, you know, Matthew Golden having a 1,400-yard season for some Packers fans.
Yeah.
But Savion Williams, you know, he was wearing a red non-contact jersey during non-contact practice.
Oh, wow. Oh, no.
This offseason. So I don't know what exact, like, there's not supposed to be contact anyway. So I don't know what exactly his injury is. We'll hopefully find out when we convene a little over a week from now for the start of training camp. But, you know, he's a bigger, thicker guy. He's about 6'2". I think he's 220 pounds maybe, or 210. I think that he's a guy that, you know, can probably take more of that than having a guy that's, you know, 5'9", 5'10", and 195 pounds coming around the end.
Jason Wilde joining us here on Kyle Bruston-Ortman across ESPN Wisconsin. Jason, we're going to get into this a little bit later, but the Packers offseason, do you think they left some meat on the bone? Is it right where you thought it would be? How do you assess what they did this offseason?
Yeah, they filled two holes that they needed to fill in free agency. Neither of them were particularly, as Tausch would like to say, sexy signings, right? I mean, there's nothing exciting about signing a guard other than giving him $77 million. And there's nothing real sexy about signing a slot corner. And so whether Nate Hobbs is going to be really good or if Aaron Banks is going to be really good, you know, they had to sign Banks. We've done this before. You know, the signing of Banks is because they missed on Josh Myers, right? If Josh Myers, who started 50 games for them, plays at the same level as Creed Humphrey, the center for the Chiefs, who went one pick later in the second round in 2021, they're paying Josh Myers. They're not paying Aaron Banks, and Elgton Jenkins is staying in his left guard spot. If they don't move on from Jair Alexander, which, again, was pretty clear they were going to do all along, and we kind of got duped into thinking that maybe there was a chance of him staying when there really wasn't. And if they don't miss on Eric Stokes with their first-round pick at corner in 2021, they don't have to go out and sign Nate Hobbs either. And so, you know, what they did was they use kind of like when you have a hole in the wall, you know, they don't tear down the entire wall down to the studs and then rebuild it with free agents. What the Packers do is sometimes there's nothing that needs to be done to the wall and they just leave it. Or sometimes maybe they put a small picture frame over a scuff mark in the wall. But more often than not, they use free agency to kind of spackle up a hole. And, you know, other teams that are much more spendy when it comes to free agency and thus win the offseason hang the off-season champions banner like they do at Hallis Hall seemingly every year. You know, everybody at this time of the year is talking about all the things they did, but what did the Packers do that, A, you feel like they should have done, but B, was realistic for them to do given their general manager's philosophy? Like, I was a fan of this as much as anyone, of acquiring Trey Hendrickson. And I suppose we can never say never, but that just never felt like something that was realistic for them to do. And so what they did was on brand. And if anybody's surprised by that or gives them a lower grade for that, you know, then they probably don't understand the way Goody does business.
Jason, not long ago, I did a deep dive into Super Bowl.
You're such a deep diver.
I'm a deep dive guy, Jason. You know that.
It's like a seal, a Navy seal.
That's right. Just plug the nose and go as deep as you possibly can and see what you can find down there. I found that Super Bowl teams that play in the Super Bowl, on average, going back, I think it went back 15 years, have on average 4 all-pro players. Now, it's been more recently. I think like the Eagles had like 7 and whatever. So it's been a lot. Packers need more all-pro guys. If we look at the defense, that's why I love these off-season rankings, because it seems like where is their consensus on who their good players are, at least going into the season. Seems like Xavier McKinney is consensus a stud, a dude, an all-pro. Seems like Edgerrin Cooper, an emerging all-pro. If you were going to pick who on the Packer roster, because that is their philosophy, who is going to develop from within, who is the third guy on defense that KBN Nation should be looking for? Say, okay, this guy, he is who I think is likely going to be the next all-pro or stud on that Packers defense this year.
Well, before I do that, I do want to ask you, is it, because again, I know you've kind of got some professor tendencies.
Oh, I'll take that as a compliment.
But if you're in academia and you're publishing a paper and these are your findings from your deep dive PhD doctorate presentation, is there a potential flaw in the data in that players who play on Super Bowl teams are traditionally going to get more accolades because their team wins a bunch of games, and so they get voted all-pro at a higher clip than even if you're a better player, but you play on a team that checks out the seventh in as a seventh seed, might not get. Is it possible that...
I suppose there is some chicken or egg argument here, but you could also I could make the same argument that the reason the team is in the Super Bowl is because they have so many players playing at a high level. I don't think, maybe Pro Bowl, I feel like fans can get skewed on, they're on a good team, so I should just vote them in. All pro, Jason, that's from the writers of the world. You have to talk to your colleagues if you think that there's a certain level of skew going on for all pro.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
I use the AP All Pro first team, second team to cite my sources, if you will.
That's official. No, that's official. So there's what would that be? There would be 22. So there'd be 44 players that are in All Pro accolades.
Yes.
Plus specialists, because we don't want to forget the specialists. They're
never
people too.
Keyshawn Nixon was one. Yeah.
But in terms of, so you're talking about between the two Super Bowl teams, at least 8 total players are taken up by guys that are on Super Bowl entrants.
Yes.
Not necessarily winners, but entrants.
Yes, there was some variability, right? But on average, going back, I believe it was 15 years I went, for sure at least 10, that the total amount of all pro players on any given Super Bowl team was a little over 4, so there'd be roughly 8 of them in the Super Bowl game itself. But like the most recent years, there were numbers like 6 and 7. The other years where there were like 2 or 3, they tend to be teams led by Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. You just happen to have a very complete team with a GOAT quarterback. So I feel like it's even skewed further down than it should be. Mm. So with the Packers, I think you've got an all-pro in Xavier McKinney. I think you've got a future all-pro in Edgerrin Cooper. I'm just curious, if we're looking to figure out who the next guys are, if the Packers are going to get to that 4, who is it, particularly on defense, because it's hard to project on offense, so many mouths to feed. Who is it on defense that you think, you know what, this guy could have an all-pro season next year, and I think he just might.
Yeah, I mean, if we're looking at 2025 and we believe that a second year in the system for all those guys up front will be a game changer for them, then it's got to be somebody from that group, right? Like, I like Evan Williams a lot, but I don't think two Packers safeties are going to be all pro, and I don't think Evan Williams is quite there yet. I don't think any of the corners are enough proven commodities for me to pick them. So you got to be talking about, you know, does Rashawn Gary, who was rated number 80 among NFL players on the countdown that the NFL Network does, does he suddenly have, you know, a 14 sack season after, or is he who he is to this point, never even having double digit sacks and having seven?
Don't forget Bradley's boldathon on Moldy and Tausch last year.
Yeah.
What was your boldathon?
17 sacks and leading the NFL for Rashawn Gary. Big swing and miss on Moldy and Tausch's boldathon.
No, they need to drug test Brad.
That's a good boldathon.
It's dumb.
Yeah, and you only missed by 9.5 sacks.
Oh, boy. So close. Sacks.
Yeah. So, I mean, it would have, you know, whether it's him or Kenny Clark, you know, I still think that Devontae Wyatt is an intriguing player. I'm very curious to see what he ends up playing like and looking like if he stays healthy, because he got off to a really good start. The one dark horse that I am thinking about, because I just don't know what Quay Walker's future looks like, and there's always a guy on that all-pro team that comes kind of out of nowhere, right? Like Devondre Campbell did a few years ago after signing with the Packers in June. And the guy that I don't know enough about, but I'm intrigued by, because he won the Butkus Award, he was an eighth overall pick, is Isaiah Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
Not as an all-pro. Now, again, you know, Zach Bond basically did exactly that, right? I mean, he was not an all-pro player in New Orleans, and he goes to Philly, and he's a first-team all-pro. But, you know, I don't know what the future holds for Quay Walker, and that Isaiah Simmons signing feels a little bit like if Quay isn't going to sign an extension at the number we want, then we're not going to negotiate. We'll just, you know, try something different. So that's a guy that when you're drafted eighth overall, it's like Tausch always says, you know, first round picks constantly have to prove they don't belong in the league before they're out of the league. Seventh round picks constantly have to prove that they do belong in the league to keep them from being out of the league. So Isaiah Simmons is getting another opportunity. I'm really curious to see if he has a role and what kind of productivity he has, especially if Quay Walker or Edgerrin Cooper, both of whom missed, at least three games apiece last year, are sidelined at any point.
Well, Jason, we appreciate the insights, the conversation. We'll be listening on Woldy and Tausch and talk to you Thursday. Maybe see you tomorrow.
All right, boys, you will see me tomorrow.
Hey, there it is. Jason Moldy in the flesh.
All right, boys. Take care. Be good.
Got to tell you about Road America, because you have Brian Redmond coming July 17th through the 20th for some vintage racing. Come see a race at Road America with so much to do for families. Kids 16 and under are free with a paying adult at the gate. Their concession stand is like a state fair feel. You can also rent the track out on other dates. You can do corporate events there. It has everything you need right up in Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin. It's beautiful up there. All the racers love bringing their families. You will love bringing your family and enjoying a race and an experience at Road America. So come for that experience. Stay for the race. Get your tickets at roadamerica.com. Is this rated X, Brad, or what is this rated?
Rated X? What?
Well, you'll have to stay tuned to find out.
Oh, no.
Birthing classes with Brad. Next.